morning, everybody. On 88.1, I'm Tom Hall. Glad you're with us. We're going to begin today with this month's installment of the Accountability Index, our series with reporters from the Baltimore Brew, in which we examine issues of fiscal and policy accountability in state and local government. We began this series in November. We talked about construction delays and budget overages on local road projects. Last month, reporter Mark Reuter told us about the status of Baltimore's audit process. This morning, Fern Shen, the editor and publisher of the Baltimore Brew, and Ed Guntz, a reporter with long experience covering planning and architectural issues, join me to talk about a massive development project in Port Covington that's being proposed by the Sagamore Development Company. That's the real estate arm of Under Armour and its CEO, Kevin Plank. Good morning to you both. Good to see you.
Good morning.
Hi, Tom.
So, Ed, locate for us where Port Covington is.
Well, Port Covington is in South Baltimore in an area that many people don't ever go by. It's off the Hanover Street Bridge on the shores of the Middle Branch of the Patapsco.
Some folks have called the Middle Branch the Baltimore's second inner harbor. This is waterfront property we're talking about.
Right. It's waterfront. The reason it's an inner harbor potential is it has just as much shoreline. It actually has four times as much shoreline. If the inner harbor has a 7-mile waterfront promenade, this has 28 miles of walkable linear shoreline between Westport and Port Covington and Cherry Hill.
And what's the size of this project? The inner harbor is about 250 acres, I think you wrote. How does this compare?
If you look at the acreage, the Inner Harbor initial plan was 250 acres starting off in the 60s. This is 266 acres, so it's actually very comparable.
But it's even a little bit bigger. Something like 13 million square feet is going to be developed in this.
Right. It's a whole other city within a city, a mini city on this side of the harbor.
And this is being spearheaded by Under Armour, Kevin Plank. He wants to locate his headquarters there, plus a bunch of other stuff. What other stuff do they have in mind?
Of the 266 acres, he wants 50 to be for his headquarters. That leaves more than 200 for anything else. And that could be housing, it could be hotel, it could be office space. He's really into manufacturing space, maker space, very creative kind of. He talks about blacksmithing and silversmithing and all kinds of almost classical trades, entertainment, restaurants. They bring allusions to trying to copy cities in Europe with a lot of lively streetscape, bars, restaurants, anything that would make it an attractive environment for his company and his employees.
So they have already presented some of their ideas about this to city officials. How much have they divulged? How solid is any of this planning at this stage?
They're early on, but it's fairly well fleshed out at this early stage in terms of trying to create a picture of where the headquarters will be and where the other parts will be and how it will all be linked by transportation and water taxi and that kind of thing.
Ed, the area right where the corporate building itself would be is still kind of unclear. They didn't address that the other day in the press conference.
When they showed what they showed everything but the Under Armour headquarters. They have showed little glimpses of that to their investors last fall, not in a way that they promise it's going to be what the drawings look like, but they're talking about 3 million, up to 3 million square feet for their own company. And if they have 13 million altogether, that means another 10 million for other uses, other parts of the city.
And they own 161 of the 266 acres that are in play here. Who owns the rest of it?
Just the institutions and companies that have been there before. There's a Schuster Concrete. There's Lock Insulators. There are old industrial uses that are there.
So mostly private companies rather than the city itself.
Right. The city has streets and certain spaces. They had their old city garage, their repair garage on Dickman Street for many years, but they ended up selling that off. It's all industrially zoned, and some of it's contaminated from years of being a rail yard. The history of it was as a rail yard and very industrial, and part of the transformation is to make it more commercial and residential and very livable and a good place to work.
Ed Guntz of the Baltimore Brew. This is the Accountability Index here on 88.1 WYPR. I'm Tom Hall, and it's Maryland Morning. So Fern Shen, here's Under Armour, a big company, big employer, important international brand that is so beautifully associated with Baltimore. They've got this great idea for this huge, gigantic redevelopment. What's not to like?
Well, a lot of people say that, and they're a great company to have. People are thrilled about it. But they just are concerned about how good a job is our city government doing at guiding what they do and how they develop. Questions have arisen, and we've reported on them, about public property parks that are owned by the city, and quiet discussions by Under Armour's company with the city about them using this property. Well, it's something that, you know, the public would think that discussion should happen in the light of day. And
sure. And your reporting really concentrates on the fact that the planning process for this has the city in a different posture than they were, for example, when the Inner Harbor was planned. The concerns here on the part of some folks is that the city is somehow abrogating its role in the proper planning process for these public, gigantic additions to the city.
Right. So continuous public access to the waterfront was a hallmark in the planning, the early stages of the Inner Harbor, and the result everyone is very happy with. You can get to the Inner Harbor. You can see the water. You know, it's not obstructed. So will that still be that principle still be retained? Ed did a good story for The Brew that you can read on BaltimoreBrew.com about the changes in the way the city has handled waterfront development. Back when the Inner Harbor was developed, this was land that the city owned and carefully controlled who was able to use it. They had to meet the requirements of the city development company as they developed it out. Now it's land that's privately owned, and it's the developers are in effect calling the shots.
And that's probably partly why they chose to be there, because it's not under those tight strictures of Canton or Fells Point or some of the areas on the North Shore where there's so many eyes and so much attention.
And they've been buying up this land. I mean,
right.
It's taken them 2 or 3 years to acquire as
right.
much as many acres as they have.
And I would add to what Fern said, that's maybe partly why people are a little wary of what's happening, because they were in a mode of being secret as far as assembling land, sort of like Jim Rouse when he was buying up Columbia. They wanted to buy as much as possible before the word got out who was really doing it, and then it was all one buyer. And it was under these shell companies, and nobody really knew what was going on. Now they're transitioning into a mode of making some disclosures and making announcements about various things and opening the very first buildings.
And I guess some of the speculation about the reasons that they were secretive about it was that they probably figured that once people knew they were going to develop this big thing, that the land that they didn't own would become very valuable or more valuable, and it would cost them more to acquire it. I mean, they don't own almost half of this area here, so they're going to have to work with somebody. I mean, I guess the way it worked in the Inner Harbor, and you did write a very nice analysis of this in The Brew, and we'll have the link to that on our website, is that back in the days of the Inner Harbor, which started in the late 60s, the thinking about the Inner Harbor, the city hired a very respected urban design firm, and they sort of oversaw this, but it was at the behest of the city. That's not happening now, right?
Right. What's happening now is the developer is hiring the designers he chooses to work with. It's not the city making the decisions. And the developer is spending the money. He's assembled a team, a very diverse team of consultants who are looking at the ecology of the land, the transportation aspects of the land, the design, the landscaping. It's possibly more than the city would ever been able to afford. But they're in the driver's seat, as opposed to the city being in the driver's seat.
Fern Shen, in addition to concerns about possible access or restricted access to the waterfront, are there other things that people have raised as concerns that, if the city doesn't have a stronger oversight posture, could end up being a problem?
There are transit issues. Is the development friendly to transit? Is it oriented to cars? Does it weave into the neighborhood, the surrounding neighborhood? And is it well coordinated with the sort of the fabric of the city?
There are two city parks, city-owned parks, one of which the city has put a lot of money into, Swan Park, to remediate environmental issues that is part of the footprint they seem to have interest in controlling in some way. And just the precedent of selling off city land, you would want to know what they're getting in return for parting with something that's valuable, especially as the waterfront cleans up over the years. As the Middle Branch and the Inner Harbor get cleaner, that only makes the value of what's on the land side all the more attractive.
Mm-hmm. And will there be visual access to the water? You know, think of the certain places along the harbor where, you know, you can't tell you're on the waterfront, and you stand over by the Visionary Art Museum and try to get a glimpse of blue, it can be pretty tough. So mm-hmm. that's another concern.
Wait, so this is somewhere, I mean, this could be a really good example of a private sector initiative that would do something that would be really great for the city. But what you're doing is simply raising concerns that if the city isn't, you know, fully invested in the planning process, certainly in the ways that it has been in the past, we could find ourselves just sort of having to acquiesce to a private company. And obviously there are concerns about that.
Yeah, it seems like a discussion that should be happening early on in the process, and that's what we're trying to stimulate.
People are disparaging of city government, city hall, that not everybody is working up to snuff in terms of the audits not being done on time and that kind of thing. The one thing I would say is the city planning department has a history of being incredibly more than competent, just really on the ball and excellent in what they do. And these aren't people that are asleep at the wheel usually, and you would want them to be engaged in challenging the developer to do the best possible job they can do. They have that ability to be that way.
All right. Well, it's great to be on top of it. I'm glad we have started this discussion here, and we will certainly continue it. Thanks to you both. We'll see you soon. Fern Shen and Ed Guntz of the Baltimore Brew. That's a daily news website featuring investigative reporting and informed commentary about Baltimore and the region. This is the third installment of our monthly series, The Accountability Index, which we're presenting in conjunction with the Baltimore Brew. Stay tuned for more conversations in which we basically ask who's minding the store when it comes to public dollars and public policy. We've got more information and a link to the brew on our website, wypr.org/Maryland Morning. Coming up after a break for the news, what the city and others are doing to help our homeless population. I'm Tom Hall, and you're listening to Maryland Morning here on
88.1. Automobiles, they pay my automobiles, they didn't even chill. I don't think you do, so you.